Is love an inexhaustible resource? One might wonder, especially if you have teens in your household. While others are certain, some would say that there is a limit to love, or that love is conditional. I would agree that love at times comes with conditions and far too many expectations. I'm curious how many of us believe that love is a finite resource, a gift that needs to be protected and shared carefully. Wow, that's impressive. You may be surprised. That was a trick question, by the way. You may be surprised how many different types of love that there are. The Greek philosophers defined 7 different kinds. The one we probably are most familiar with is known as Eros, right? Everybody knows Eros. That passionate, romantic kind of love kind of knocks you over when it hits you. Then there's philia, defined as friendship with shared goodwill. Storge is familial love as experienced between a parent and a child and vice versa. Ludus is a playful, flirty kind of love, fairly uncommitted, described as full of dancing and whatnot, no strings attached. Pragma is a long-term love, safe, secure, pragmatic in nature. One might feel this kind of love in a marriage after 30 years, or 10 years, or you pick your decade. Philousia is self-love, which can be, as you might imagine, either healthy or unhealthy, depending on just how much one loves thyself. I personally value agape as the most important love of all, and it's described as universal love, such as the love for strangers or nature. Unlike storge, it does not depend on filiation or familiarity. Agape can be said to encompass the modern concept of altruism, defined as unselfishness, concern for the welfare of others. Recent studies link altruism with a number of benefits. In the short term, altruism leaves us feeling euphoric. Anybody ever feel that altruistic euphoria? Yeah, that wasn't a trick question. The so-called helper's high. In the long term, it is associated with better mental and physical health, believe it or not, as well as longevity. More generally, altruism, or agape, helps to build and maintain the psychological, social, and indeed environmental fabric that shields, sustains, and enriches us. Given the increasing anger and division in our society and the state of our planet, we all could use a little bit more agape, right? Agape gives us a framework to love beyond our and others' shortcomings. That is why I entitled my sermon this morning, Accountable to Love. Because we are accountable to love, and in many ways, love holds us accountable to one another. I hope and believe that the minute one becomes a member of First Parish, we commit to embracing this practice of agape. Truth is, you've probably been practicing it all along. On our best days, agape is how we relate to one another. Agape is what we hold sacred, and agape is what I encourage us to engage in when I speak about love from the pulpit. It requires that one acts in accordance and believes that the other, whomever that might be, is actually worthy of, as we are worthy of, love, support, kindness, and compassion. The key to agape is that we love even when the other is not all that lovable. Those folks who are sandpaper on our souls is who I'm talking about. You know who they are. Agape is about loving even when it's not always convenient and or when it's not reciprocated. Engaging in agape is not about the payout. It does not ever meet our expectations. It extends to both the deserving and the undeserving alike. And it is one of the hardest practices to find an ROI, or return on investment, in. Thus, it can be difficult to maintain over the long haul. Here's a story. Nikos Kazantzakis, which is a very challenging name to say, an author who in his memoir shares an account of an incident in his life, explains the importance of agape. He shares, "I knew that no matter what door you knock on in a Cretan village, it will be opened for you. A meal will be served in your honor, and you will sleep between the best sheets in the house. In Crete, the stranger is still the unknown god. Before him or her, all doors and all hearts are opened. Night had already begun to descend, and I entered the village. The doors were all shut. In the courtyard, the dogs caught the intruder's scent and began to bark. Where should I go? At which door should I knock? At the priest's home, where all strangers find refuge. The priests in this village are uncultivated, their education meager. They are incapable of any theoretical discussion of religious doctrine. But agape lives in their hearts. A door opened. A little old woman came out with a lamp in her hand to see who the stranger was who had entered the village at such an hour. I stopped. 'Long may you live, madam,' I said, sweetening my voice so that she wouldn't be frightened. 'I am a stranger and have nowhere to sleep. Would you be so kind as to direct me to the priest's house?' 'Gladly. I'll hold the lamp so you won't stumble. God, his holy name be blessed, gave soil to some, stones to others. Our lot was the stones. Watch your step and follow me.' She led the way with her lamp. We turned a corner and arrived at a vaulted doorway. A lantern was hanging outside. 'This is the priest's house,' said the old woman. Lifting the lamp, she threw the light on my face and sighed. She was going to say something, but changed her mind. 'Thank you, my fine woman,' I said. 'Sorry to bother you. Good night.' She kept looking at me, not going away. 'If you wouldn't mind a poorhouse,' she said, 'you could come and lodge with me.' But I already knocked on the priest's door. I heard heavy footsteps in the yard. The door opened. Standing in front of me was an old man with a snow-white beard and long hair flowing down over his shoulders. Without asking me who I was or what I wanted, he extended his hand. 'Welcome. Are you a stranger? Come in.' I heard voices. I entered. Doors opened and closed, and several women slipped down hastily into the adjoining room and vanished. The priest had me sit down on the couch. 'My wife is a little disposed. You'll have to excuse her, but I myself will cook for you, lay the table for your supper, and prepare a bed so that you can sleep.' His voice was heavy and afflicted. I looked at him. He was extremely pale, and his eyes were swollen and inflamed, as though from weeping. But no thought of a misfortune occurred to me. I ate, slept, and in the morning the priest came and brought me a tray of bread, cheese, and milk. I held up my hand, thanked him, and said goodbye. 'God bless you, my son,' he said. I left. At the end of the village, an old man appeared. Placing his hand over his breast, he greeted me. 'Where did you spend the night, son?' he asked. 'At the priest's house.' The old man sighed. 'Ah, the poor fellow. And you didn't catch wind of anything?' What was there to catch wind of? His son died yesterday morning. His only son. Didn't you hear the woman lamenting? I heard nothing. Nothing. They had him in the inner room. They must have muffled their laments to keep you from hearing and being disturbed." The author was extremely afflicted by this news. He cried for his lack of insight, his lack of understanding, and for the death of a son that he did not know. He left the village to continue his journey, forever changed by his experience. I wonder if this kind of selfless welcoming is possible in our culture. How would we respond to a stranger knocking at our door, seeking shelter at dusk? I personally think it might be a little strange. Even on the easiest of days, not to mention the hardest. Could we care about the welfare of the stranger, even in the face of our own suffering? Would it be asking too much to imagine such love and respect for the other? You know, in listening to this story and thinking about our country, I think about the immigrants who flee to this country with no money, no connections, and lots of hope for a better future. How different it must feel to be criminalized, disregarded, and discarded, considered less than, even though they're not that different than you or I, except for circumstance. Here are folks in need. What are we called to do? I think of the visitors who arrive at First Parish. I think of them as the strangers who arrive at our door in need. What does it cost us? What do we give up to be open, to be vulnerable, giving and loving to this new immigrant to Unitarian Universalism? Our privacy, ownership of our space, safety, convenience, our very comfort. Will we have less or more with their arrival? I personally think that this question of what it would cost us is actually a very difficult one to answer. But if we want to heal ourselves and heal this world, this is the one question and the resulting answers that we must wholeheartedly contemplate and embrace. Arms wide open or arms crossed, how will we choose to greet the stranger? I would like to think that agape is the love that we, the friends and members of First Parish, share here when we welcome the stranger or new members into our tribe. It begins with the giving of the benefit of the doubt. Let us bestow this gift upon one another. It is the respect that we have for one another just because we are the same species, because we are sentient beings. We have similar feelings. We are equally vulnerable. Agape, universal love, is the care that we show when another is in need, and we are all in need of one another. I believe that agape is the absolute minimum that I would ask us to cultivate and to share with one another. Universal love without expectation, return on investment, or judgment. Do you think I'm being naive? Okay, but let's be honest. This doesn't always happen, right? How many people feel like they failed a little bit this week? Right? I mean, come on, it's not easy. We can be judgmental. We can get mad, be in a car, triple that. We can be annoyed with people at times, be unforgiving. We can even dislike people who challenge us or not like us. We can be afraid of those who are different. We can spread rumors, knowingly or unknowingly. We can be less than welcoming at times. Maybe we are having a bad day, feeling especially judgmental, or feeling a bit impatient. I can feel those things on any given day. Every person on this planet can experience moments like these, where we fall short of our ideal self-image. We make mistakes. This is the reality of being human. Whether we like it or not, the ideal of agape is wonderful, but it is just that. It's something we strive for. And this ideal of agape comes from Greek mythology and explains that agape is a beautiful goddess who has lived for so many years but does not age a day. She was born and raised in Kythira, an island southernmost and easternmost of the Greek Ionian Islands, the same place where her lifetime rival was born and raised. She believes in true love and loyalty. She has never fallen in love because she's too busy helping other people to find love and happiness. She's very kind. She has no sisters, but has two loving brothers named Eros and Damon. She wasn't born a goddess, but became one when she helped the gods Zeus and Hera fall in love. In return, Zeus decided to make Agape the goddess of love because she was so effective at helping others to find love. Agape has one rival, as I mentioned. His name is Lysandro. He is the god of destroying love. Although they're rivals, as you might expect, agape still respects him, even though he tries to thwart her at every turn, because that is who she is. How can we take this ideal of hope and aspiration from the goddess Agape and turn it into a tangible practice? Like, how do we do that? We could try to be good. We could try to do the right thing every single day. And we fall short. A way that we can walk the talk, to take that first step on the journey towards loving presence, begins with, any guesses? Our verbal interactions with one another. How we treat one another. And it begins, I'm going to offer you a Sufi practice. It is said that before you speak, let your thoughts, words pass through three gates. At the first gate, ask yourself, is what I'm about to say true? At the second gate, ask yourself, is what I'm about to say necessary for this other person to hear? At the third gate, ask, is what I'm about to say kind? True, necessary, and kind. If we stop for a moment, that just gave me chills. If we stop for a moment to mindfully consider before we speak, before we post or tweet, how different might our world be? Building on this three-gate Sufi teaching, the Buddha shared in the Vaka Sutra another thing called a five-fold test. It is spoken at the right time. It is spoken in truth. It is spoken in affectionality. It is spoken beneficially. It is spoken with a mind of goodwill. I like to think of this practice, this true, necessary, and kind practice, as speaking our truth in love. It's a practice of speaking and living with love, and it is centuries old. This is not a new notion. It's been around forever. Jesus taught that loving our neighbor is easy. The real practice begins when we love our adversary, the stranger as ourself. That is the true practice of agape, to love the other in thought, word, and deed. As we welcome visitors and new members to First Parish this morning, and as we welcome the stranger or immigrants into our neighborhoods and homes, as we welcome one another again after misstep or mistake, let us greet one another with an open heart of welcome and forgiveness. Let us begin yet again on this last Sunday in February as a new community built upon a foundation of agape, universal love. This is the gift, this is the commitment that I call us to give to ourselves and to one another, to be truly accountable to love in thought, word, and deed. I invite us to take a few moments in silent reflection and meditation. For this we pray. May it be so. Amen.